Is Florida State spring camp growing confidence or concerns? Michael, there's been a little bit of back and forth this past week after the open scrimmage for the media that people are a little bit worried about this upcoming season. And I can see both sides of the conversation. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to look back at what happened in the scrimmage, some other practice notes that we have from the recent practices that Florida State completed. And we're going to give our thoughts and takes on these things on why there may be some confidence, but why we're also having a little bit of concern as well. So what's up, Noel Nation? We appreciate you joining us. We are Plant the Spear. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. And got a full episode of football today. We apologize for taking last week off, but life got caught up a little bit. We were both kind of busy. Wasn't a whole lot to talk about anyway, but now that the scrimmage is in the books and spring camp is coming towards a close, there's only about five practices left. We're going to kind of do our mid-spring progress report here, so excited to jump into this one. But before we get into it, thank you for joining me, Michael. And how are you, my friend?
I'm good. Joining you from Dallas, Texas, in the heart of SMU country. You know, they still think they're great in the ACC, but whatever. We'll get back at them. But it's good to be with you again. And yeah, I mean, we got some confidence, but we also have some concerns. And so let's get into the episode and figure out what those things are.
Yeah, so let's first start with some spring takeaways. I want to talk first about the interview that Mike Norvell gave after yesterday's practice on April the 10th, because I thought it was pretty interesting what he said. You know, there has been some talk throughout the spring where he said, you know, maybe there were some guys that were really pushing the issue to get better and the intensity. And you know, he's talked all offseason about fixing that edge, creating that edge, getting it back into this program where guys are just really ready to fight hard to get better. And then there's been times where it seems like guys really just kind of weren't ready to take that challenge. You know, I watched I don't know if you've seen it, but I watched the interview that he did with Josh Pate. And yeah, there was a lot of talk about that edge. That was really the one big thing that they talked about. And so yesterday, when you talk about his interview, he said that the practice did not lack intensity. And yeah, so I think it's good to see that guys are really starting to get after it. Of course, he said, you know, you have to start controlling your emotions because there were times where they let it get away from them a little bit. But man, it really does seem like this team, this is something we talked about coming into this year with the regime change, with all the new coaches, that we wanted to see practice be physical. We wanted to see these things be, the intensity be ramped up in practice. And it does sound like that's something that they're embracing. It sounds like that you got guys going after each other. There's battles on the field. A lot of guys kind of laying each other out. You know, it's a physical practice, man. And so that's something that I think we've really been looking for. And so I'm glad to see it, because he talked about, like, you know, this is something he mentioned where he's like, look, install is great, and we know they're doing a lot of install right now, but install is great. You can have all the pretty plays that you want, but, and I'm going to paraphrase what he said here, but if you don't basically come out and punch somebody in the mouth,
that's right,
it doesn't mean anything. Like he said, I want you to feel FSU football. And so this is something that we really wanted to see them get back to. So I'm excited to hear about those things are something that's returning to the practice field, because, you know, if it comes back to the practice field, then that's going to come back on Saturdays. And that's this is that lack of fight was something that really hurt this team last year. So if that's something that they're really working into this spring camp, man, that's going to pay dividends going into the fall.
Well, to, you know, quote Mike Tyson, you know, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth, right? And so Florida State came into last season thinking they were going to be the big dogs of the conference after what happened in 23. And, you know, even, you know, separate the snub out, they thought, you know, they were going to be it. And then they got punched in the mouth. And it was, oh, hold up, wait a minute, right?
Yeah.
And so I totally get, and I love the fact that Mike Norvell has come into this offseason just trying to instill not just a toughness, but almost like a mean mugging, like, I'm going to rip your throat out. Like, that's it. We talked about that in the offseason before spring practice. That's what we wanted to see out of this team. And so to hear that they had an off day on Tuesday, and then for him to challenge him and then to come back and have a much better day, that he said there were physicality. There's not just one player. It was all over the field. He even talked about where Squirrel White had this big time block on the perimeter and he was going through and being physical. I mean, you know, Squirrel White's a little, you know, he's kind of small, but for him to get up into somebody and say, no, I'm going to put you on the ground because you're not getting to my running back. Like, that's the kind of dog mentality we wanted to see.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really good point when you talk about kind of how things played out into 2024. You know, when you look back to 2022, this team was coming off a bunch of bad seasons, really.
That's right.
And they had that edge to go prove themselves. And then 2023 was kind of like, all right, well, they can be good, but how good are they really going to be? And you had all those guys come back, and Florida State, you know, they came out and they just really smacked LSU in that first game. And so you just saw the edge from day one. That team had an intense fight about them to prove that they were one of the best teams in college football. And I think 2024, you had a lot of guys that kind of rode the coattails of 2023. Oh, well, you know, we were 13-0, 13-1 last year. We're going to be good this year. And then when, like you said, you got punched in the mouth, you didn't know how to respond. And you didn't respond well at all in any fashion or form. And so it feels like now this year, they're working to build that edge back to say, look, man, what last year was not this team. Because you got, what they say, almost 40 new players on the roster, an entirely new staff other than about two or three coaches here. And so what happened last year doesn't define this team. And so I think that's important to set that edge, to bury last year and not talk about things that most of this team wasn't involved in. And so it's nice to see them kind of getting that back, because honestly, man, last year when you talk about this team just playing hard and giving the effort, man, I think last year, if you'd have just got maximum effort out of that team, they probably win at least 4 to 5 games. You know, I don't know how good they would have been, but a lot of it was just the loafing and the lack of effort. That's right. So, man, if you can just fly around and play hard, which is something that Tony White talked about, and we're going to get into the defense later, good things can happen. Yeah. And so now let's talk about some of the scrimmage takeaways here that we saw. There sounds like there was some good, some bad. We got to couch it with a few things first. But before we jump into that, let me bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Roback. Roback has elite FSU gear. Look, I love their gear. They got great hoodies, great polos. They got some quarter zips there. It's FSU branded stuff. They got a polo with Doak on it, which is pretty cool too. So make sure you check that out. It's going to be hot for those summer games coming up. That Alabama game is going to be a cooker. So you're going to want to make sure to have some of that nice dry fit gear. Make sure you check it out and save 20% on your first order with code SPEAR. So we appreciate you supporting those that support us. That's roback.com and use promo code SPEAR. So Michael, let's start off with the scrimmage, and we'll start on the offensive side of the ball. But I think really the overarching thing that we have to talk about here first, and I will say, just set the stage for you guys, that this was the first one that's been open to the media. The first time the media has been able to get a look at this team. Now, we were not there, so we are having to rely on the eyes and ears that were on the ground, the major outlets. Now, we know you have to take that with a grain of salt because of how things have gone in the past, but it's what we got to work with. So that's all we have, and we have to go off of that and the post-practice interviews and things like that. I also think it's funny, Michael, that, you know, one of the things you have to couch this with is all the guys that were out. So I think was almost like scrimmage number two. We're going to open it up to the media. Mike Norvell gives that, you know, he already stabbed the media in the heart, but now he gave a little twist by the one scrimmage you're going to watch, I'm just going to hold everybody out of.
So exactly.
You basically get to watch a scout team scrimmage. So maybe this was like a little extra middle finger to the media there. I don't know. But talking about that, just so you guys know, we do have to rely on a lot of what their reporting was. And also you have to couch this with, there were multiple starters out. Like they said, Deuce was not there. Squirrel was basically not there. LaWayne McCoy is pretty much out for the spring in general. You had three starting offensive linemen out. You had multiple players on the defense out. So it is really hard to get a read on what you can take away from this spring scrimmage. And I think that's why there may be some overreactions to what was reported in the spring scrimmage, because it's just, man, when you start stripping away some of these top pieces, which is something we're going to talk about later when you talk about the talented depth, when you take away one or two of those pieces on a team that, let's be honest, one of my biggest concerns is the amount of talented depth that you have. Right. Not having one or two guys could be the difference between a win or a loss in the fall. And so if you're missing 5-8 starters, that's going to really hamper what you're able to do. We also know that there was a lot of install happening in this period, so it's more about teaching than necessarily getting after it. They did report that defense won the day, but that's not surprising because offense was very much shorthanded compared to what the defense had. Yep. But I will say, like, of the guys that have been out, you have heard that Deuce has looked really good throughout camp. You have heard that. I haven't heard a lot about Squirrel White, but we know he was coming into camp, coming off an injury at Tennessee, being banged up. So we haven't heard a whole lot there. And there's just been a lot of guys out, man. So we have to couch what we have to talk about here with the fact that so many players were out and we're only able to go off of the eyes and ears that were there.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically looking at a skeleton crew. I mean, this is like a placebo, you know, a spring where you don't really have the guys that you actually need to look at to evaluate. They're not playing. They're not out there. They're not practicing. They're being held out. They did get Jalen Lucas back. They did get Squirrel White back a little bit, but not for that scrimmage that they had. So even the things that we're saying and reading and hearing, it's going to be much different when fall camp comes around, because you're going to have hopefully those players back in there. So it's really hard to judge the totality of this Florida State team based on what we're hearing and reading and seeing from the coaches in this scrimmage or in this spring, because half the team is out. But yeah, what you can do from this is you can look at the players that are playing and say, okay, what do we see from that level of group? We know that when those other players are going to come back, they're going to actually raise the floor of this team's capability for the season, the win-loss capability. But from the group that we're hearing and seeing right now, what are we getting? That's where mostly what you're going to hear from a evaluative take from us today.
Yeah, and one of the things that I will say with this is most of these guys are not predicted to be injuries that linger into the fall, right? And correct. So I think a lot of this is going to just mostly be precautionary stuff. You know, you don't want to force a guy in the spring to play through injury,
that's right,
because of how much you're going to need him in the fall. Like, exactly. If something don't feel right, you don't want to risk that in the spring, because you have to have these guys in the fall. There is no point about that. And I also think that this does early on in the season, it does help you build that depth, right? If you have these guys that are getting these extra reps and these extra opportunities, if something were to happen throughout the season, now you have guys that have more reps in the spring that they can rely on in the fall if they have to. So starting out on offense here, let's start with the most important position. And, well, we know that's offensive line, but technically it's quarterback. So we're going to start with quarterback here. Thomas Castellanos, man, first off, it's hard to know the entirety of what you're getting, because he's in a, you know, he can't run the ball. They're going to blow it dead, you know, so it's not really live, right? Now, we did hear Tony White say a few times that they blew the whistle, but I don't think we had him, right? And so he talked about his explosiveness, and so that's exciting, but we know what he is as a runner. But really the one thing that has stood out to me from the reports more than anything, more than just really how his arm looks and the question marks that we had, is that he is showing great leadership and he is showing great command of the offense. There's some inconsistency as a passer, but that was to be expected. We didn't expect him to come in and be, you know, Jameis Winston 2.0 or even Jordan Travis 2.0 right, or anything like that. And obviously we can't see his full running ability in practice, which is the biggest part of his game. But, you know, I think it was Landon Thomas maybe who had a comment after one of the practices where he was like, you know, Castellanos straight up told some dudes, like, look, if you don't want to be here and you don't want to work to get better, you can leave.
That's right.
And I just love the intensity that he brings at that position. What they say is, man, he wants to be on the field. He wants to be QB1 all the time. He wants as many reps. He's very competitive and he's a great leader. And man, that is just something that you lacked last year with DJU. You just had a guy who, you know, I wasn't in the locker room, but you saw on Saturdays, man, the team just didn't look to respond to that guy. And you know, I think when we're going to do an episode coming up, and I have something that I think you guys are really going to love. We talk about these nerding out episodes that we do every now and then, and you guys seem to love it. I was going to include it in today, but I didn't want it to take up too much time. I have a really cool episode planned for where we're going to talk about Thomas Castellanos versus Jordan Travis and kind of which one of those years you're getting, 2021, 22, 23. But we'll save that for another day, so be on the lookout for that. But one of the things that you really saw with Jordan Travis in 2023, you know, his best passing year was 2022, really.
Right.
But, man, he was just such a great leader on the field. Like, he knew the positions. He knew how to get guys lined up. He got frustrated when you made mistakes. And so that leadership ability, man, that was a huge part of that offense. And I think you're starting to see Thomas Castellanos take that step in the leadership department, knowing where guys are supposed to be in this offense, getting them lined up. Because, you know, he has familiarity when he was at UCF with Gus. So, man, you need the passing to come along, right? Yeah. And you got all summer to work on that. You got all fall camp to work on that. We know his passing got better last year at Boston College in that pro-style offense. But we know he can run the ball, but man, it's the intangible stuff that this position lacked last year that seems to be his strong point this year. And I'm really excited to hear that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I do love the that his leadership is one of the more glowing features of his tenure at Florida State. I mean, we needed that, as you said. I mean, I remember looking at the sidelines last year while watching the games and seeing all the offensive players huddle around themselves, but then DJ kind of standing off to the side, or DJ looking like he's just seen 50 million ghosts because he's been chased down by defensive lines all day, right? Or throwing a cash out. I know I keep bringing this up, but man, when you miss a wide open wide receiver in the back corner of the end zone and you hit a brick and there's still a nub of that brick still missing at Doak Campbell, like, I mean, just come on. Like, and regardless of what his skill set is, you know you're going to get a true dog, alpha dog in Thomas Castellano. You know that he's not going to mess around. You know that if he's going to make a mistake, it seems like he's going to own up to it, and it seems like he's going to make sure you own up to it as well, and that right. You fix it. I mean, from the very jump, you heard people saying he was getting the wide receiver, he was organizing the 7-on-7s, the throw arounds, you know, the volunteer practices. He's being that guy. I mean, you mentioned it earlier. He told somebody, look, if you don't want to play right, if you don't do this right, you can get out of here because we're about winning here. Like, you love that. Now what you want to see is that's great and all. That's awesome. Right. We love it. But we need to see that translate on the field. We need to see that translate in you actually showing your skill set and doing what you need to do to win.
Yeah, 1,000%, man. Because, you know, once you transition into the summer, 99% of this is going to be player-led practices. Exactly. So you want a guy who is really focused on leading this team. And I think that's what you're going to get out of him. That's when you develop that chemistry with all these wide receivers that you got and things like that. So, you know, like you said, man, it's got to translate on the field. I'm not worried about his running ability. We just need to see that passing come along. We've heard there's been some inconsistencies. There was a good touchdown, but two picks.
That's right.
One of them sounded like it was a deflected screen pass. So it wasn't really necessarily on his fault. I mean, it's hard to say without seeing it.
Right.
So you need that too, because I mean, I think as much as you can rah-rah on the sideline, you got to lead by example. You got to lead by your play. And so that's got to be something that has to come along as well. But I just love the intangible aspect because it is such an important thing at the quarterback position. Absolutely. And we saw what last year lacking that really did for this team.
Yeah. Now let me say something real quick about the interceptions. You know, the thing is, and you remember this, Jesse, when you were playing football as well too, is that when you go into springtime and you're doing these installs, you know, the coaches are really, they're throwing everything at you. They're trying to see what is your strengths and what your weaknesses. And remember, Gus almost had Thomas Castellanos at UCF. So he was recruiting him hard. He kind of knew, or did he?
Yeah, he was there as a freshman.
Sorry. Yeah. He had him as a freshman. So he knows his strengths and weaknesses. And now he's trying to tailor an offense that's going to accentuate his strengths and minimize his weakness. So, yeah, it might make sense that early on you might hear of a lot of these interceptions and things, because this is not the first time it's been reported that he's thrown some picks, that his accuracy has been a little bit off. But I think what Gus is doing is he's trying to see, okay, what is the range of the throwing package, of the passing game package, should we keep him in? So I wouldn't freak out so much necessarily around these interceptions, but I would keep an eye on it if it's constantly happening.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, he threw 14 picks in 2023, and that was really his first full action season.
Right.
And he's talked about that before, about how he was just kind of a young player trying to run around and make things happen. And he cut down on those a lot in 2024. So really, you know, I think without going into the Jordan Travis comparison, you know, Jordan kind of had a Thomas Castellanos type of skill set in 2021, where you're just kind of running around making things happen. But man, he took a massive step in 2022. That's right. And that's really what you want to see. Like, we saw Castellanos passing take that step in 2024. The rushing took a step back because of the style of offense, but now you're coming into a style of offense that's built for your skill set. So you just want to see the passing. We know he can run. He ran for 1,100 yards in 2023. You want to see him take that next step as a passer to kind of open up both sides of the offense for Gus Malzahn here. Now, staying in the quarterback vein, Michael, it looks like we might have us one in freshman quarterback Kevin Sperry. Like, I really did like this kid coming out of high school. Like, he's got something about him, man. He's not scared to run the ball. He's a tough kid. He's got a little bit of confidence about him. Obviously, you know, a kid of his size and stature coming out of Texas. We talked about this when he committed. He gives very much Baker Mayfield-esque vibes.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's got that kind of confidence, that swag about him a little bit too. And they just keep talking about him. And one of the things that's really come out is, like, he can throw the ball pretty good. You know, that's something that as a freshman you expect to take time to progress. But when they talk about his athleticism, they're like, look, it's legit. It is way better than a lot of people thought when you get to see it in person. I mean, they said he embarrassed, I think, a linebacker or a DB in the open field. And really, man, for me, I think this is important right now. I mean, we heard Brock Glenn wore the, you know, the teal jersey, the turquoise jersey in tour duty and all that stuff. But you're not hearing a ton about Brock Glenn. Like, it honestly wouldn't surprise me, because when you have a guy like Thomas Castellanos, who's a smaller quarterback, you know, 5'10", little guy, and he's going to be running the ball a lot, there's a chance he's going to miss some time, right? And so when you look at QB2, if Sperry gets some quality reps against Kent State and East Texas A&M, and you got the bye week in the middle there, it wouldn't surprise me to see him be your quarterback number two later in the season if he can successfully run that offense. And I think that's really good for you. And that's not a dish on Brock Glenn, because he's a great kid. But, man, I think you hitting on Sperry, or at least what it looks like right now, that's massive, because let's be honest, man, Florida State is struggling at quarterback recruiting right now. You've had Bo Bentley has eliminated you from his final schools, which I think that was kind of a little bit of a pipe dream there anyway. I don't think you were going to get him to begin with. Really, the major red flag for me is Landon Duckworth is looking. He's got a crystal ball to Ole Miss right now. Yep. Now, obviously, if you end up having a very successful season, you can probably win him back late.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like he's really even too interested in visiting campus and stuff like that after Gus almost had him committed at UCF, even though his recruitment has exploded. You know, I wasn't worried about the Bo Bentley thing, but Landon Duckworth, if you miss on him, man, that if you could almost get him at UCF and you can't get him at FSU,
yeah,
that's a big red flag for me. But, you know, coming off 2-10 with a system that doesn't really play well to quarterbacks, even though it is that's kind of his skill set. Man, I think it's big that Sperry looks like a legit quarterback, because if you can have him be successful in this offense, that can maybe give you time or bridge that gap to figure out what you're going to do. Maybe Sperry's gives you enough to have a good season or two to where you can reel in that next quarterback. But, man, the quarterback recruiting is a concern, right? That's something that we're not going to hide from. So, hitting on Sperry, if he continues to go like we've seen him progress, that's big for this team, and I'm excited to see it, because, I mean, the kid, you know, hey, I mean, Baker Mayfield was fun to watch, if nothing else. So, man, if you could kind of replicate that skill set and Gus Malzahn's on offense, I think you got something.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, just going to Karen Sperry real quick, I think he's been a huge surprise to the coaches. And it's not that they were, like, super unaware of his skill set, but I think it's been a surprise of how well he's adapted so far and the skill set that he has been able to show here, so early in the spring practice. I mean, they got him late. They landed him late in the recruiting cycle. Yeah. And this dude has turned out to be a really, from what we've heard from Gus Malzahn, a super dynamic, you know, runner who plays with a lot of confidence. He plays like a senior in college instead of a freshman in college right now.
Yeah.
Now, again, like, I mean, obviously he's not I personally don't think he's a threat to beat out Thomas Castellanos. If that's the case, then we got bigger problems.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is that he is really challenging, you know, Brock Glenn for that number two spot on the QB depth chart this early in the season is already news to everybody. And I mean, it'd be great, because going to your second point about the QB recruiting, dude, you know, I've been on this since we've known each other. Like, we have not been able to recruit or develop any quarterback that wasn't named Jordan Travis here at Florida State. I mean, you go back to before Mike Norvell, go back to Willie Taggart, go back to the end of the Jimbo Fisher. I mean, right after Jameis left, I mean, what was it? We had Everett Ghostin, we had Smag, we had Alex Hornibrook, Swens Flaw. I mean, it's just over and over again. It's just every single QB we've had, we've just not had any good luck with either developing or recruiting them, or they got arrested, you know, with Henry. You remember that kid? He was supposed to be the next one. And then Mike Norvell has not had, I mean, gosh, every QB he's brought in has either transferred out and gone somewhere and not done really well, or his name was Jordan Travis. I mean, we just talked about how Cromahawk looks like he's going to be a backup to a freshman, you know? Yeah. I mean, and so if Sperry can be a hit, if he can be a hit and he can develop and he could come into next season vying for that number one spot, man, I'll feel so much better about our QB room, at least in the short term. Long term, we still have some major issues. But if he turns out to be another bust, I mean, this is just another indictment on Mike Norvell and Tony Tokraz and their QB development.
Yeah, and at least in a Gus offense, we were talking about this before the show, when you look around the country, especially in your own state, where like Carson Beck, I've heard some rumblings that he's really, his head's just not in the game,
right?
Which is something we joked about was we kind of expected down there in Miami. You know, and then you also have Lagway, who has been injured in the spring and not really been able to throw the ball there at Florida. You know, if something happens to their top-level guy, they're probably in trouble. Like, if you have just a pretty decent to good runner slash thrower in a Gus Malzahn offense, you can still have success. So I think if you hit on Sperry, that's going to be really good for the next year or two to kind of give you time to get your footing back under you from a success standpoint and then recruit those guys. But yeah, man, it's exciting to hear. And I do think he's going to get meaningful reps in those two kind of cupcake games there after Alabama, because obviously you're going to want to trust Thomas Castellanos in a big game like Alabama. But if you know that this guy could potentially miss some time, you're going to want to start figuring out who number two is. And honestly, you know, we haven't seen Brock Glenn in a Saturday performance yet look like he's ready to rise to that challenge. And, you know, I have nothing against Brock Glenn, but
no,
I'm here for the best guy for the job.
That's right.
And if that's a freshman Kevin Sperry, then let's see it. But moving on down the list here, talking about running backs. Now, this is something that is kind of interesting, right? And I will have to kind of give them a name drop here. This came from War Chant. They said they didn't see anything special at running back. That's a little bit concerning when you talk about a Gus Malzahn offense that is built on having a special running game, right? That's what concerns you the most. Now, is that surprising to me? No, because when you look at the group, look, I like Kazai Holmes. I've been a fan of his since he got here. He was a top five all-purpose back coming out of high school. But, man, it's been 3 years, and he still struggles to find playing time. There's got to be a reason for that. You know, Cam Davis needs to take a big step as a, you know, he's a tough kid. But it's hard to judge anybody behind that offensive line we had last year. But it doesn't sound like he's really that special guy, right? And of course, he's still young. You know, Roydell Williams was extremely underwhelming last year, again, behind a terrible offensive line. Yes, he put up 564 yards at Alabama his last year there, but 129 of that was against South Florida. So how good is he? Sam Singleton moved over to wide receiver. So you kind of limited your depth here. And I think the question that you're looking at here is, you know, it's good to have consistent backs, right? As long as you can get consistent gains, but who can be that special guy? Who can be that next level guy? Because you've seen, when you look back at UCF, you know, they had really that one special back that they relied on, and he was really good. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now, RJ Harvey. You know, he was a 1,000-yard rusher two seasons in a row. So who can be that guy for you? Now, I think you're looking at, will that be Osmond Kroma when he gets here? But what worries me, man, is he's not an early enrollee. He's not there right now. Now, we've seen his film. The kid is special. He looks different. But I don't think you can just rely on a true freshman who's not an early enrollee against Alabama. I just don't know that you want to do that. I'm sure he's going to get some carries, right? I'm sure that's going to happen. But I do think once you get past that Alabama game, the same thing we just talked about with Sperry, you have a couple of games where you can give Kroma the workload, and you know he can run the ball against East Texas A&M and against Kent State and against UVA before you get to Miami, and you can get him up to speed to see what you got there. Is this somewhere they need to maybe look at a portal addition in the spring? We'll talk about that too. But you know, when you do talk about Kroma, when he comes in as a freshman, I do just, and you guys have heard me make this example before, I look back to Michael Dyer in 2010 at Auburn with Gus. As a freshman, that kid had 4 100-yard games, led the team in attempts and yards as a running back. Cam Newton led the team in rush attempts and yards, but he also played 340 more snaps. Even RJ Harvey that we talked about at UCF, he was second in attempts as a running back as a sophomore at UCF. The thing is, Gus isn't scared to play a young guy if he's the best guy. It's just he's not scared to play him. So I really think when the problem is the spring portal session is going to open up before you get to see Kroma. Maybe there's a guy out there that you want to look at taking. And we're going to talk about the portal stuff here towards the end of the episode. But, man, I think you got a stable of decent backs. But Kroma's the one you're really kind of banking on being your special game changer. And in this type of offense, I think you need that special type of game changer. Yes, there's going to be a time and a place where you're going to need the guy. Look, get me 3 to 4 yards. Get me 4 to 5 yards. That's fine. But you're going to want that home run threat.
Yeah.
And right now you're relying on a non-early enrollee freshman. So this is going to be a point of contention for me going into the season. You got depth. I just don't know how special that depth is.
Yeah, you know, this position group is, it's a, okay, in my mind, it's a bit of a misnomer because there's no more position group that's reliant on another position group to be good for them to be good. Okay. Yep. And what I mean by that for you, Noel Nation listening, is that in order for the running backs to be good, the offensive line has to be good, period. I don't know what college football program has a special running back who can make things happen when your offensive line is letting people back within seconds, getting blown up. I mean, we saw that last year. We saw that at the end of the Willie Taggart year. Like, when the offensive line is terrible, it doesn't matter how special you are. You're not going to look great. And so what I say that because I wonder how much of the non-special comment that's being made out there about this running back room is due in large part to the fact that we do not have our starting five offensive linemen out there for the spring.
Yeah.
Now, again, yes, can the running backs make a difference? You know, they got us, you know, they got vision. They're able to shake a guy or two for sure. That can also play a part of that. And I don't want to discount that. And so, yeah, there is a little bit of concern that we're relying on a non-early enrollee who's coming in the summer, right, to be that special guy. But I also just wonder if it's just too early for us to say whether or not this room is special or not, because we're playing with basically one hand tied behind our backs when it comes to the offensive line. And so I just feel like maybe it's not a full fair assessment to say this room isn't special. Could you say there's some concerning trends that we're seeing, but we have to couch that. We have to asterisk that with the fact that we don't have an offensive line. Sure, I think that's totally fair. But I don't know if I support the and I'm not saying you're saying it, Jesse. I'm just saying the comment that's out there of this is not a special room. Well, we can't really fully see that. Now, if we get into the fall and we have a fully starting offensive line, we have all our guys there and we're still hearing and seeing the same things. Okay, let's have the conversation that this room might not be special. But right now I'm waffling on whether or not I should blame more of this on the absence of the offensive line, or is this actually a issue within the running back room?
Yeah, I think that's a much better way to look at things, right? Because obviously we know Toa Fili was not a bad running back, but that's put him behind that offensive line last year and he had a terrible year. It is what it is. Not everybody is Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook is the only FSU running back in the last decade that can make a bad offensive line look like they don't even matter.
Exactly.
So maybe, you know, Kroma is the next Dalvin Cook. Who knows? But I think that's a very fair take on a way to look at it as it's hard to judge them because it's so reliant on the offensive line.
Right.
And if, you know, we expect there to be a pretty big difference between that starting five and what you're seeing out there right now, because there's some other guys that maybe aren't in the starting five that are out too, like Jalen Early. And so you're starting to see some guys step up a little bit there, but I mean, not having that starting five, it's hard to judge them. Cause like you said, there is no other position group that is so reliant on another one to be good. But again, man, I think with that being said, what they said in the reports is that they were consistent at moving the ball, just not that explosive.
That's right. Yeah.
And at the same time, while it's great to have a dynamic running game, consistency, it can pay off too, right? As long as you can keep the chains moving and find success, man, it doesn't matter if you run 10-yard plays or 100-yard play. You're still going to make it to the end zone, right?
Yep.
And so, like you said, it has a lot to do with the offensive line being limited. But I will say that this does raise two things for me, right? First off, I am a little bit worried that the defense is giving up consistent gains against mostly a backup offensive line
and
quote-unquote not special running backs. That does concern me a little bit there. That was my first thought when I heard that. But two, I think when you talk about the depth for the regular season – you know, this will force guys to step up and create some extra depth, right? You're going to have some of those backup offensive lines start to work into things. Now, I do want to touch on something when you talk about Gus Malzahn's offense here. I don't think it's just the offense, right? Because I think that offense is both consistent and explosive. And so I got a couple of quick numbers here to throw at you from his time at UCF. I'm going to just look back at the last 2 years real quick. At Central Florida in 2024, because again, they were playing Power 4 football at that time, in yards per play, they averaged 6.5 yards per play in 2024, which was 16th in the country. In explosive plays, which was 20-plus yards, they had 70 explosive plays, which was 26th in the country. So they were, I mean, basically 26th and 16th, top 25 area in both that consistent and explosive. So there's explosives in this UCF offense as well, in Gus Malzahn's offense, should I say. And surprisingly, for such a run-heavy team, 54.3% of their explosive plays last year came on pass plays. So it's that consistent run that sets up the explosive pass. Now, it even gets further there when you look at UCF in 2023 when they didn't have so many quarterback issues. Yards per play metric, they averaged 7.07 yards per play, which was seventh in the country. And their explosives, they had 86 explosive plays, which was fifth in the country. And 62.8% of those were pass plays. So, man, Gus's offense, it may not all be glitz and glamour all the time.
Right.
But the way they talk about he consistently runs the ball and he forces the issue, man, there is consistency in that offense that he runs. And as long as you can keep those chains moving and open things up for those explosive plays, again, I just gave you the history. There is plenty of consistency and plenty of explosiveness in that Gus Malzahn offense. He averaged over 6 yards per play and at least 70 plays of 20-plus yards all 4 years at Central Florida. They were top five in rush yards per play the past 2 years at over 5 yards per rush. So, man, they are going to run the ball. It may just always – it may be 5 yards in a cloud of dust, right? And then they're going to pop you over the top with a couple of pass plays. But, man, that's – there's plenty of consistency and plenty of explosiveness in this offense. So maybe the fact that you're not seeing the explosives happen right now because you don't have those receivers that create those explosive plays, which is we said 53 and 63% is where the explosives come from. They're just getting more of that consistency right now. You'll see that come when this offense is at full steam ahead with all of its pieces.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're just setting the base level of what this offense can produce right now, right? With all those players out, you're just trying to get everybody that is available for the spring at the base concept of the scheme. How we're going to run the ball, how we're going to attack the defensive line, how we're going to make our checks, all those things. And then when you add those other players in, then you hopefully will begin to see the explosiveness, right? I mean, Gus Malzahn has been known as the offensive coach who's going to run that ball north and south, north and south, north and south, north and south. He might hit you with a flare screen, a bubble screen, a wide receiver screen. He might throw a little, you know, in route, dig route, you know, comeback route, you know, something of that. But always within almost all of his play calls is an RPO where he can then take the roof off of the defense, right? Yeah. As quickly as he hits a ball. And then he'll get that team right back up to the line, and then they'll run it down your throat again. That is a Gus Malzahn offense. But at the base level, they have to be able to run the ball. We know Mike Norvell's offense was based primarily out of a Gus Malzahn offense, right?
Right.
Some terminology changes, maybe some different scheming in that sense, but it's been the basis of running the ball. You know you're going to get consistent level running. And I think that's what Gus is trying to do right now is build that consistency so that when those other players come back, when they get in the fall ball, now they're looking, okay, where can we find the explosives at? Where can we get that 10-plus, 20-plus deep down, you know, or big run breakout that's going to happen? But let's get the consistency happening right now.
Yeah, and you know, you made me think of something whenever you were saying that. When you talk about being able to create explosives, if you're going to do it downfield in the pass game, one, you got to give your quarterback time, and you're missing three starting offensive linemen.
That's right.
And who are your roof taker offers, right? That's even the word. That's going to be Squirrel White, who was available, and Deuce Robinson, who was also not available. So even LaWayne McCoy is a guy that you could look at there. So the guys who would take the roof off the defense for you weren't there. And so that's, you know, you'll see that type of stuff come. But like you said, you're just really trying to build that consistency. And hey, I'll take it, Michael. If this offense gets 5 yards per play on the ground, I'll take that all day long. Because last year, I feel like it was probably about -5 yards per play on the ground. So just consistently moving the chains is something that we didn't do last year, except consistently moving backwards until we had to punt.
Yeah, if you can find yourself in 2nd and 4 more times than you find yourself in 2nd and 9, right?
Yeah.
Or if you can find yourself in 3rd and 2 instead of 3rd and 8, I mean, come on. And that makes it a lot more easier to convert, or makes it a lot more easier to make your 4th down calls a lot more easier. But when you're 3rd and 9 and you're trying to chuck it, you know, 9 yards, and you know the defense is pinning its ears back all the time, it makes it a lot more difficult to be consistently getting 5 yards on the ground all the time.
Right, because, you know, last year you put yourself in so many obvious passing downs with an offensive line that couldn't pass block and receivers that couldn't catch. So, like, you just put yourself in a tough situation. And so to close out the offense here, just a couple of things that did stand out from the scrimmage. Luke Pettibon is a guy that really is starting to emerge as a veteran leader, a veteran presence on this offensive line. That's huge. That's a Wake Forest transfer. He was one of the best centers in the country last year. This is a massive get for this offensive line because, you know, you're just talking about a guy here. When you have Thomas Castellanos at quarterback, who has a good understanding for this offense, and you pair that with a veteran center who also can have a good understanding for this offense, man, that's just going to help. That's going to go so far in making sure guys' alignment and assignment, right? That's what we always used to preach in football was alignment and assignment. Right. Just you get those things down, and the rest will sort itself out. So this is great. You also have a guy who can actually snap the ball, doesn't hit you in the toes, doesn't snap it over your head. That's been something that's been great consistently there for him as well. So, man, that might be one of the biggest portal additions, right, is just having that veteran center presence. The other thing here is that this tempo is a real thing. Yep. They are pushing the pace of this offense. And I went back and looked at UCF. There's a couple years where they were one of the top five in the most plays run. So, I mean, they will push the pace. I know some people were kind of like that offense was really slow last year at UCF. But, again, I point to a lot of the quarterback problems. But they said, man, they're running about 100 plays in these scrimmages. And so they're pushing the pace. They're getting in work. You saw Tony White talk about on the defense where sometimes they're celebrating a big play and the offense is already lined up ready to go.
That's right. That's right.
So they're really pushing it. And that's a good sign that even this early on, they're able to push the pace that much. You know, once they get that offense down and everybody's back, they're going to be able to improve on that even more. They are running about 60-40 run to pass, which is true to form for Gus Malzahn. Right. I went back and looked at UCF in 2024 and 2023. You're looking at about a 58-59, 60% run to pass split there. And the last thing I want to say about the offense here, when we talk about this Gus Malzahn offense, because I know there's still a lot of trepidation about this. I went back and just did some looking real quick. In 2024, 5 of the 8 losses, because they went 4-8, Five of their 8 losses, they gave up 30-plus points, and they lost to UF. They have nowhere near the talent UF is. I didn't expect them to win that game, and I believe it was in the swamp. In 2023, 6 of their 7 losses, because they went 6-7, they gave up 30-plus points, and I think a couple of them were like 40 points or whatever. Yeah. Their defense was atrocious. And even in 2023, when they went to the Big 12, which, you know, that's the year it expanded, every former G5 school that went finished below 500, and UCF had the best record of the bunch. In 2024, you know, they had a terrible quarterback situation, and they played a decently tough schedule, like 3 ranked teams. They had Arizona State and all that in there. So, man, the point of all that is Gus's offense may not be, you know, like they said, we want to have the number one offense in the country. I don't know that you're going to get that. But I don't doubt, even with the sum of the pieces, when you look back at UCF, they didn't really have any guys that popped off the paper on you. I mean, R.G. Harvey was a good back. They had John Rhys Plumlee at quarterback. Nothing crazy there. They still put together a pretty good, solid offense. So I think you're going to have a top 25 offense with the pieces they have if FSU can stay healthy.
Yeah, I mean, you imagine having that top 25 offense and then pairing it. I know we're going to get to the defense in a second, but actually finally having a defense that might be able to kind of hold back some of the offenses that you're going to face and having a consistent offense. I mean, Gus Malzahn is probably oozing at the fact that he can just call plays, right, not have to worry about a defense giving up 40 points almost every game. Yeah. And that's going to matter a lot. And I love the tempo, going back to the point about the tempo. And listen, when I play college football 25, I've got it down to a point where I'm literally on the ball. There's about 10 seconds between every play going off the clock because I am going turbo. That's what I call it. And I know that Gus Malzahn loves turbo in every staple of offense at Auburn, at Arkansas, at Tulsa, at UCF. He loves that tempo because he wears down the defense and you're just running at him, and then boom, boom, right over the top. And so I hope that we're able to keep that up. Mike Norvell loved the tempo as well. Yeah. He just couldn't consistently keep up when you're 3rd and 9 all the time and then you're 3 and out most of the time last year. You could not get that tempo going. So hopefully we're able to see a lot more of that this season.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously you limit the defense's ability to substitute, and hopefully we're going to, you know, not substitute our offensive line every single play, and we're just going to roll with some of these guys. But yeah, man, I mean, flipping over to the defense, you talked about it. I'm sure Tony White is going to, you know, no offense to Nebraska, but, you know, I'm sure he's going to love having an offense that might score more than 8 points a game every now and then. So that's it. We got a Nebraska fan who's helping Michael produce wise on the road. So I had to be I wanted to use the kid gloves on that one. No offense.
That's right. That's right.
But man, I will start with this, right? And hey, he can attest to this, right? Probably. Man, I love Tony White.
Oh gosh.
I love Tony White. I love listening to him talk. I love his approach to this defense. You know, he's talking about like defensive linemen, you know, pardon my French, I want him to grab him and throw his ass to the side. And that's what a defensive lineman should do. Like, that's what he said. So it's not, I'm not using bad language on purpose, but man, I just, that mentality, right? That dog mentality is what I love out of Tony White's defense. You know, something that he talked about in that post scrimmage interview that really stood out to me was physicality, effort, and aggression can make up for a lot of things.
Yes, it can.
And that's something he talked about. Like if you were to be out of place or you were to miss an assignment, but you know, if you cause chaos and you do it at 100%, then just make havoc.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so last year you saw a lot of times where like, you know, and he's not in Garnet and Gold anymore, so I can pick on him now, but like Pat Payton, get out of place and you're loafing at the same time, you're not doing anything but making everybody's job harder. You know, if you crash the edge and you weren't supposed to crash the edge, but you knock three guys out doing it, at least you're making everybody else's job easier. And other thing that he preached that I really like was a calm next play mindset, no matter the result of the previous play, not whether it's a sack, not whether it's a TFL, not whether it's a blown coverage and the offense scores. The next play, that pro-level mindset, that's something that he really preaches, and that's something that I think this team really needs, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What I love most about Tony White is, yes, I think he's going to bring a top 20 defense here. I think he's going to get the recruits that he needs to do. I think he's going to get that all together. But what I love more about Tony White right now, until we see the defense on the field, is that he's instilling a confidence in this defense. Okay, I get – And this might be putting a lot of pressure, so I apologize. But I get like a young Mickey Andrews feel when I listen to Tony White. You know, Mickey Andrews was like, let's not complicate the defense. Let's go man-to-man, and let's bust some asses, okay? I apologize, right? But that's what Mickey Andrews was all about, right?
Yeah, let athletes be athletes.
Let's athletes be athletes. We don't need to overcomplicate this thing. Let's put them in the right position to make a play. And I get that from Tony White. I mean, there was a part where in one of the scrimmages, the offense had just made a big score. And so the defense had put their head down. And Tony White, I remember him saying in one of the interviews, he said, you know, you could see it like, here we go again. Like, this is what always happens to us. And he like paused practice. He got into their butts. And then they went down to the goal line and they got four straight stops on the goal line. Like, and it was just awesome. I just love that. Now, the reason why I love that is compared that to what Adam Fuller, our former defensive coordinator, was. I mean, there was rumors out there, Jesse, you may have heard this stuff where, I mean, there would be times in practice where he'd tell people to do something, kids, and they wouldn't even listen. There was one instance I remember hearing about where he had told a kid to go do something. The kid just completely ignored him. Shaheem had to go over and try to get the guy back to do the thing. And they just whatever. There was one game where, you know how Mike Norvell loves to get them out in the field together, and a bunch of the defensive players left, and Adam tried to call him back, and some of the guys flipped him off. That's what I read and heard. He had completely lost that defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And so to have a guy here who is like now, like they believe in him, they trust in him, they're like responding to him, like that is just like, man, can we get back to that kind of Florida State football? We're nasty. We're mean. And we just like, you know, I love when Jimbo used to say, like, when Florida State comes, hell comes with it, right?
Right.
Like, that's what I want, man. And I think Tony White is bringing that back, that confidence.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think Adam Fuller was necessarily a bad coach.
No.
I just think it was time for a change because his message was falling on deaf ears. And I think that's the thing with Tony White is like, one, you see, like you said, man, he's a confidence-building guy who builds the confidence in these players. You know, they're calling Daryl Jackson a first-round pick and all this stuff. They're challenging these kids.
Right.
But when you watch some of the practice clips, like, he's intense, too. Like, he will get in your butt, too. So I love that coaching style. And I think because of that, one of the things that you've heard throughout spring so far is, man, the defense plays hard. If nothing else, they play hard, and they have really good pursuit to the ball, which is not something that we saw last year. And really, it's just doing the basics very well. And that can make such a big difference, man. Like That's we right. said, alignment and assignment and playing hard. Like, even if you aren't, this is the thing that I look at, like, with this team this year, especially on defense. Like, even if you aren't special, quote unquote, at certain positions, even if you don't have a Jared Verse, even if you don't have some of these guys at these positions, if you can play consistently good, more, if you can have more good than bad, but maybe it's not great, man, there's a lot of teams that overachieve based on being good more often than they're bad. And so, I mean, because really when you look at this schedule, you have as much or more talent than probably 7 or 8 teams on the schedule.
That's right.
So as long as you don't have an unmitigated disaster with the talent that you did like last year, and you get the most out of the pieces that you have, and they play hard and they play together and they know where they're supposed to be, to me, man, that is really going to set you up to have a successful season on defense. And so yeah. I'm excited to see this defense just play hard, man. Just yeah. like you said, play hard, play fast, play physical, and be in the right place. It makes That's such right. a big difference, which is something we didn't see last year.
Yeah, man. I you know, again, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but my lasting image of that defense last year is, I think it was a Boston College game. Pat Payton is right there to make the play. Shaheem is right there to make the play. And literally just these two little offensive linemen just come up and not even like power bulldoze, just a little shove. And they get knocked out of the play, and that running back goes for like 15 to 20 yards. And you're just thinking, come on, man. Like, where's the effort at? Where's the like, what for, you know, to use the word? Where's the man, I don't want to get beat like this, you know? And I think Tony White is instilling that if anything, even if you might be in the wrong position, I think there was a play where, if I remember hearing correctly, in the practice where a running back or somebody broke a long run, and one of the defensive players chased him down and stopped him at the, you know, right at the 5 or something like that. And then they had the goal line stance where they stopped him. Like, that's what matters, man.
Right.
Like, man, you are willing to put that energy and effort because it matters to you. The logo, the name on the front of the jersey matters it so much that you're willing to put yourself on the line to make sure that person doesn't score. That's what I'm excited to hopefully see this season.
Right. And that's something that you saw. Remember in 2023 in the Pitt game, wasn't it Fentrell Cypress or someone
that ran
that long and stopped the touchdown. I mean, that's just what you got to have, man. And then again, all that they talk about the pursuit to the ball. That's huge because when you're standing around the pile and guys are hitting guys, I mean, you never know, man, that ball might pop out and it might create a turnover. Just good things can happen when you're around the football. And so I really love what they're preaching, the way they're building this defense and their style of play. So let's talk about just a couple of quick things here from some players and things that have stood out. One is very fluid and versatile defense is what we're hearing. I really like it. It's almost what they call like a positionless defense, right?
Right.
I mean, obviously you're not going to have Daryl Jackson at safety and coverage, but you know, you have guys that can line up in different positions with different skill sets and do different things and give different looks. I really like that. Elijah Herring is a name that stood out at linebacker early on, which we said, I think this was a guy, you know, led Memphis in tackles, led Tennessee in tackles before he transferred. This was a guy that when he came in, you thought this was going to be your number one guy. Omar Graham has had a few highlights well. And, you know, Tony White said that really, he said there's some youth and experience on the back end. They're trying to figure out some guys, you know, they got some guys that they're challenging on the D-line. But he said, man, the linebackers look pretty good. It's a very competitive group. And you also remember you do have a couple of guys out for the spring. Michael, when is the last time the linebackers were the strength of the defense
at
Florida State? Like, that's music to my ears, right?
Oh,
I love hearing that. And then your guy that you had high on the list here, Earl Little Jr., is making progress.
Yep.
Now, he's still got some things to work out. He's kind of more working at that middle safety position there in this 3-3-5 where he gets to play more downhill, but that's good because Earl Little is a very physical guy. He is not scared of contact, so it's nice to see him coming along as well. Now, you are still limited with guys missing time due to injury. A lot of your secondary players are kind of banged up and missing time, so that's kind of unfortunate. You know, still a very young group that we felt like needed to get some reps under their belt in the spring. But a couple of other names that stood out, the Desir twins.
Yep.
They say, man, them guys look good, right? And Tay Diggs is another guy, Coastal Carolina transfer, that they really like. He's very long and athletic, has great measurables. I know some people were kind of questioning what that was going to look like coming from, you know, I think he was at Youngstown State and Coastal Carolina. So how good can he be? But man, can he be Byron Turner Jr., right? Can he just be that? And yeah, I think, I think like that can be someone that, that if you can just get that out of him, that that's good enough. Yeah. I've also, I really liked what he talked about. Tony White talked about KJ Sampson stepping up, said that, look, we know we're going to need him this year. You're big, you're twitchy, and we're going to need you because right now Daniel Lyons is out. And that's a guy that I think is going to be your number two defensive tackle. Said he's still inconsistent, but showing promise. So there's a guy there that, that maybe you get more out of than what you thought coming into the season. Amari Williams, just a dude, man. Just
bro, I have so much about him. They are excited about what he could bring.
Just a dude. Like, could be the, I mean, there's not much he can do. Like, he's already a good tight end, good pass catcher. And now looks like he might be a guy who could maybe start at defensive end for you, maybe be the number two there. And one other thing that that kind of stands off to the side, this has nothing to do with camp. I was watching an interview with James Williams and said that he's up to 265 pounds now, plus 20 pounds from the time he got here. So, man, I'm you need a big year from James Williams.
Yes,
you
I mean, he had 7.5 sacks at Nebraska. And I imagine you'd be like, hey, can we double that this year? Can we get, can we get 14?
Yeah. And, so nice. And plus, that 20 pounds is going to help you in the run stopping, too.
That's right.
So, so, like, you need a big year from him. And then the last one that I'll throw out here, and I'll kick it back to you for some thoughts on some other guys, is Shamar Arnaud.
Yeah.
Was a freshman defensive back that was basically locking people down. And I know he went against, I think it was Jordan Scott a few times, the 6'7 wide receiver. And they said won every rep.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this guy might be like a baby Jalen or something. I don't know. We'll have to see. But, man, it's good to see some of these freshmen stepping up because right now I think defensive back is probably your biggest question mark. On you know you got some pieces you like, but who's going to be the starters?
Yeah.
And so to see some guys emerge, I know they talked about Kai Bates. I know they talked about Charles Lester, had a couple good reps. Sounds like he got a little banged up, but he's fine there. Man, it's just it's good to see guys stepping up while you got some guys that are out with injury because you're going to need – depth in the secondary this year.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. You know, I think the KJ Sampson thing has been a big thing. I've heard so much. His name gets his name keeps getting mentioned, obviously with Amari Williams. I mean, there's jokes that he might be the next Travis Hunter, that he's going to start both offense and defense. Yeah. We'll see. I mean, you can't it's a different position. You know, Travis, easy to play. It's easy to play secondary and then play wide receiver. It's different to play like, you know, have your hands in the dirt and then go play tight end on the other side of it. But I've been really impressed by what I've heard about Amari Williams. I think he could actually make a deep impact on this team. And of course, my boy, who I've been saying his name, and I'm so happy that one, he didn't transfer when they fired Randy Shannon. Thank the Lord Jesus they fired Randy Shannon. But also like Omar Graham, he's finally coming into his own. I'm not saying he's going to be a star of this defense, but man, he is everything we've read and heard. He has been showing so much more consistency. He's been much more aggressive in that. People that are close to the program, they love his confidence right now. I mean, it's just been, you know, if he can avoid injury, it will be such a awesome thing to be able to see him step into his own on that defense. And then again, I think, you know, probably one of the biggest things for me is, and I know we'll get to this, is just I just have some depth concerns about this defense and where it's at. And, you know, I'm hoping that they'll address some of that in the portal.
Yeah, I think for Omar, just be Tatum Bethune 2023, right? Like you don't have to be special, just be consistent. Daggone good, right?
Exactly.
And then I think for Amari Williams, one good thing that helps out too is like, yeah, you like him as a tight end because he flashed there last year, but you still have Landon Thomas.
That's right.
And Chase Lofton is a guy that stood out in spring camp too, just the size and athleticism. So it gives you the freedom to put Amari Williams where you need him most. And that may be on the defensive line this year, which is something that we can talk about now. And so as we go to wrap this episode up, let's just kind of transition into with what we're like 12 or so practices into spring. We got about five or so left, 13 practices in. Where are our concerns and things and our confidence out of this whole thing as we get ready to wrap up this episode? So for me, like you mentioned, man, my overall concern is about these injuries, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, from what I've heard, it's like there's a lot of other teams that are dealing with this. This is not anything crazy. I think a lot of it's mostly precautionary and not stuff that's supposed to last into the fall. That gives you good confidence. But what happens if this does happen in the fall? What happens if you get a couple of guys that get banged up throughout the season? You know, we were talking about it before the show before we jumped on. My biggest concern with this team is I think if you could, you know, in like NCAA 25, you can just turn injuries off, right?
That's right.
If you could turn injuries off, I think you got a pretty good squad, right?
That's right.
I think you got a squad that could sneak up and win 10 games, right? I'm not predicting them to win 10 games. Hear me say that. But they could, right?
They could, yeah.
But I also think that the experience and talent level down the depth chart, it is such a gap that if you were to peel away two, maybe three guys, I think you could go 5-7.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's in the tank too. You know, you lose Thomas Castellanos for a game or two, or Squirrel White goes out. He's injury prone as well. You lose right. Daryl Jackson, and you know, maybe the Daniel Lyons is banged up or something like that. You lose that. That's my biggest concern, because while it's precautionary now, this can happen during the season, and you don't Absolutely. Have time to just hold these guys out. So that's what does concern me the most about this, is the talented depth and the injuries that are piling up. So I don't like, you know, that a lot of the guys that you're going to be relying on the fall aren't getting those reps in the spring. That's my other main concern, because you have a lot of guys that are either not very experienced, like a KJ Sampson. You have a lot of guys who maybe are new to the scheme, like some of these offensive linemen that are coming in, like a Gunnar Hansen, who's working his way back into practice, which is good.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not that they lack experience. They lack experience with their teammates exactly. in this system. So that I don't like, because you don't have time to mess around, man. You got Alabama on deck. You don't have time to screw around. It's not like you're leading off with Texas A&M, right. or East Texas A&M
That's right.
or whatever. So that I don't necessarily love. That's my biggest concern. But I would like to see them address a few things in the portal, which we'll talk about next after I throw it to you for some concerns. What builds confidence for me, man, is it feels like the edge is back, right? That's it feels right. like the work ethic is back. It feels like the edge is back. It feels like you have a quarterback who is a leader and knows this offense. It feels like you've got a couple of anchors on that offensive line. It feels like the defense is actually going to play hard for once. So, man, I think, like, the scheme stuff will come along in the fall, right? But I think you're developing the intangibles right now, and that's what makes me confident. Because like we talked about before, that 22-23 team, for everything they were and weren't, man, they had a drive like teams we haven't seen in a long time. And so if you can get that back, that gives me confidence. We'll see how the scheme stuff plays out once the install is done later in the fall. The injuries and the depth, the talented depth, is my biggest concern right now.
Yeah, I would have to. I'm in the same boat with you. I think the injuries are like the probably my number one concern, because it's not just that, you know, Mike and them have said like, oh, you know, most of these injuries shouldn't impact the fall, you know, and what do we mean by most? Like who in that list is going to impact the fall? Like, I'm curious about that. But most of these injuries shouldn't impact the fall. But the problem is the consistency that you end up building with your teammates in the spring going into the summer. So if you have to literally wait till to fall practice, to preseason camp, to start trying to build that consistency, well, now you're already behind the eight ball in that sense as well, too. And we don't need this team to be behind the eight ball in building that consistency. We need five offensive linemen that we're going to run out there that we're not having to rotate, because this guy has only had so many reps and this other guy's had so many reps. And so we're going to try to mix and match. That's what got us into this problem in the first place with the offensive line, is it's inconsistent play because of inconsistent practice, because of inconsistent reps. Right. And so that's a major concern to me. And then again, the depth behind those injuries, man, if, like you said, if I would put it, there's probably like about 4 to 5 players. I think that if they get injured for any amount of time, well, the floor for this team drops drastically.
Oh yeah.
Because the depth is not there just yet. I mean, you know, poor recruiting, bad evaluation, not great development has led to all of this. And so, yeah, 4 or 5 players are out, man. The floor drops, the ceiling drops for this team. And so I'm hopeful that those players will be able to get back into the rhythm, get started in the summer. And that way they're not as far behind when fall camp, preseason camp gets here.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, there's some guys that could emerge throughout the summer and in the fall, and you got Chroma coming in and things like that. So there could be some of these things that are addressed. And again, some of these guys, you know, that you've heard good things about Andre Otto and some like guys like that, where this is their opportunity to get better.
Right.
But, you know, it's just, it concerns you because, like you said, man, yeah, okay, maybe against Wake Forest or UVA or the 2 cupcake games, maybe those players don't matter.
Right.
But against NC State on the road on a Friday night, against the Clemson in Death Valley, against the Miami and Alabama, you lose 4 or 5 guys, you're going to – I'm not going to be confident in picking us to win that game. And so it's just that important. And, I mean, depth is hard to hold on for every team in the country, right? But the last thing I want to talk about here before we jump out of this episode is I would like to see them shore up a few positions in the portal because the spring portal session is coming up very soon. Yes, I know that it will be tough, right? And it will probably be expensive to get a couple of these players. But with what we've just talked about, I don't think that you need a lot if you get the right pieces. I just think you need one or two here, one or two there to make you feel a heck of a lot better about where you're at into the fall. I think the pressure is so intense on this coaching staff this season. You gotta do what you gotta do, right? You gotta go out and spend the Keon Coleman money to get these guys if you got to, right? Gus, maybe you donate to the Battle's End or whatever. You know, Tony White, Mike Norvell, maybe you kick a check there to the Battle's End because it's your job depends on it.
That's right.
And so, but I really do think that if you could get three or four guys, man, that could be the difference between 7 wins and maybe 10 wins, right?
That's right.
And so I think the order for me is first off, defensive line is number one because I am concerned about the depth there. Obviously, the one guy we haven't talked about is Jason Jenkins, who was supposed to be a starter. That is one that I have heard the injury could drag into the fall.
That's right.
Again, maybe he's back by UVA, but he's maybe the Alabama game's in jeopardy.
That's right.
Don't waste your money on a Grady Kelly. I don't think you need that. Go find a Braden Fisk. Go find a Fabian Lovett. Go get one of those types of guys, right? I think number two is your offensive line. You can never have enough offensive linemen, right? Because they just get banged up. They're big guys. They're running around. They have injuries. I love the starting five. I think you got a good 6 or 7. But I would feel good if you could go find a Dylan Gibbons, right? That was a spring portal addition. Yeah. He was a backup at Notre Dame that ended up being the best offensive lineman you've had here in the past probably 10 years. Go find me a Dylan Gibbons for the offensive line. Just one. And I think you're good there. I think number three, man, is this was not something that I had on my list coming into the spring, is running back. Like, if you could find a decent veteran running back. Now, this one's hard, right? Because, like you said, you have to couch it with we don't know whether it's the chicken or the egg, right? We don't know if it's the running backs or the offensive linemen. We don't know that Chrome is going to be the answer. He might. Right. The problem is that portal window is going to come and go before you find that out because you only got so much time. So I think maybe you see what's in there, right? Yep. Maybe you don't get it. Maybe you don't overpay for it, but maybe you just see what's in there.
Yeah.
Because you have a lot of okay already. But if you could find a special running back, man, I think you should go after it. And number four, it sounds a little weird, man. Maybe even you consider a DB, right? Just because you got so much youth at this position. And that's something that Tony White talked about. Maybe you just go find a Fentrell Cypress, right? Not elite. Yep. But a proven veteran that you can count on to kind of lock down one side of the field to where you can go get a lot of the other guys to rotate and find who you want. But I think you got a lot that you like at DB. I will say that. I just think maybe if someone is available and a veteran, reliable DB, maybe you kick the tires on them. But, man, I mean, like, yeah, okay, landing a Keon Coleman for this offense or something would be awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know that you need to do that.
Yeah.
I think you just need – what I'm more looking at is you need to spread that wealth around and find building blocks for the foundation of this roster in case of injury. You don't necessarily need like the gold dome on the top of the building, right? You don't need that's a Keon Coleman. You don't necessarily need that. You need bricks for the foundation
in case
something happens because of the injury concerns and the depth concerns that I have. So really, man, as far as like the portal goes, that's kind of where I'm at. Always the trenches. Maybe kick the tires on a running back if there's a dynamic one in the portal. Maybe a DB if there's a veteran presence you can find.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll put it this way. As you said, regardless of what positions you go after, you're going to overpay because these players and these agents know that you're in the spring session and you're desperate for something. So you're going to overpay. You might as well just get over that right now. You're going to overpay. No Nation, you're going to hear numbers get thrown out in the spring portal session. Don't freak out. Every team is going to overpay right now because this is the first session is where you can get more negotiation. This session, not very much negotiation. Either if you need it, you're desperate, you're going to overpay. And with that being said, to me, it's always going to be the trenches. Yes, let me caveat that. If you get a gold dome that literally falls into your lap, absolutely. You can't resist it. Go get it. Okay. It makes sense. But if there's not a gold dome that is absolutely, oh my gosh, their war win above replacement is like better than two or three, don't touch it. Go after the bricks, like you said. And for me, it's always going to be the trenches. Go get an offensive lineman. Go get a defensive lineman that they don't have to be superstar quality unless it is, and they're the gold dome, then go pay. Yeah. But if they're a silver dome, you know, if they're a silver dome or a bronze dome, and they're going to help you, don't go get a plastic dome a la Grady Kelly, right?
Yeah.
Don't go get a straw dome. Go get a gold or bronze or silver dome there for the offensive line that is a surefire, can start day one, can get you in there, or at least is a qualified backup, especially on the defensive line. I think that's really where we need to focus the spring portal addition to. I don't have the same concerns about running back as you or others do, again, because I really think that if we can get this offensive line going and a Gus Malzahn, he could take you and me and make you us an NFL quality running back if we got an NFL or if we got an offensive line that did really well. I do think you should look, you know, poke an eye at the DB situation a little bit there. My, if you can find one that's a really good veteran one that can come in and help, absolutely, I think you go after that. But really, for me, it's all about the offensive defensive line, especially the defensive line. If there's one, a good one out there, go overpay for it because it's going to help you out in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I say running back really is because I know Gus Malzahn's offense is so dependent on, like, a special running back can make a huge difference. But like you said, I mean, he could make, you know, a diamond out of coal, you know, and I don't know if he could make me an NFL running back. I mean, I got eligibility the way these NIL numbers are. Like, that's right. Good thing we're only running 5 yards at a time because that's about all you're going to get. 50 yards, I'm faking a hammy because I'm out of breath.
You pulling that Dalvin Cook, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just out of breath. That's what I really pulled is the lung. But yeah, man, I just think there's a few positions that they could shore up that would really make a difference for this team. But, you know, I'm not, the sky is falling. Like I've seen people posting on social media this past week about, they just think it's going to be a terrible season for Florida State. I'm not there. I think that you have, you know, the schedule last year, we've talked about this to wrap things up. It was a hard schedule last year, consistently hard. Maybe it wasn't like a murderer's row, like a Florida schedule or something like that, but every team on that schedule was pretty decent. This year, you got enough teams that you should be better than that. If you just do things right and you play hard, you should win 6 to 7 games.
That's right.
And then maybe you can surprise in a couple games. So I just think that one or two little more additions for depth reasons, because it's a long season.
That's right.
Would really make me feel better about how things would go over the course of the season. But I still feel good, man. I think it's too early to tell. It's too early to sell your stock and all that type of stuff in this team. You know, we both renewed our season tickets. So, hey, we're like a bug to a bug zapper, man. We're right back in it. So I'm excited about this team. Like, I know last year happened, but look, man, as a Florida State fan, like if you're not excited about the team, what are you doing, right?
That's right.
We'll just have to wait and see how things play out. But, yeah, there's where this team's at, and I'm excited to see how things play out into the fall. Am I saying we're going to make the playoffs? Am I saying we're going to win the conference? No, I'm not saying that, but that's not on my list of goals. I mean, it is, but you know, I ain't putting my money on it. I'll put it to you like that. But I think we're still in line to have the season that we're kind of expecting, right? As long as we can stay healthy. So with that being said, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Glad to be back with you. As the content comes, we'll be back. Make sure you drop a like and subscribe if you enjoy this episode. Rate and review on the podcast. We are still closing in on 2,000 subscribers. That would be great to hit that number before the season gets here. Check out today's sponsor, Roback. Get 20% off your first purchase with code SPEAR. And we will catch you guys on the next one. Hopefully baseball gets back to some winning ways this weekend. We're trying to be positive, so we're just gonna leave that for another episode after a little bit of a struggle there. So thanks for watching, guys. We'll catch you on the next one. As always,
go Noles.